Good afternoon, and a very warm welcome to our Christmas edition of Unbelievable, the show that brings Christians and non-Christians together for dialogue and discussion. I'm Justin Briley, with you for the next hour and a half, as we meet an atheist guest, Tylene Polly, and we'll be explaining why we brought her on for this Christmas edition of the show in a moment, and Glenn Scrivener, our Christian guest. And Glenn joins me at Unbelievable, the Conference 2018, on Saturday, the 19th of May. Put it in your diaries. Glenn is a wonderfully creative evangelist, communicator and Christian thinker. It's going to be great to have him and many others join us at a special day thinking through faith, tough objections and some of the answers to Christian faith. So look out for more details about that, the full theme, ways to book in and all the rest of it coming early in 2018. Glad you can be with me here on the programme. Don't forget you can find out more about the show at our website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Well, on today's special Christmas edition of Unbelievable, we're asking, is it okay to take Christ out of Christmas carols? Tylene Polly and Glenn Scrivener join me on the programme today. Atheist musician Tylene Polly is the creator of a record titled The Atheist Christmas Album, which she describes as all the best traditional music with new, non-religious music. Tracks include O Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, The Holly and the Ivy, Go Tell It on the Mountain and Silent Night, but all with the religious references taken out and effectively secular lyrics to replace them. So we're going to be meeting Tylene on the show today, and she's going to be in conversation here today with Glenn Scrivener. Glenn's been on the show a couple of times before. He's an evangelist with Speak Life, regularly reaches out to secular audiences through creative online videos, and the latest is actually called Meet the Nativity. It's a short comedy series involving a young couple who are transported back to the first Christmas. He'll be telling us about Meet the Nativity during the course of today's programme, I'm sure, as well. But Tylene and Glenn today are going to be engaging on why non-religious people still love to celebrate Christmas, if it's okay to take the Christ out of Christmas, and whether Tylene's non-religious versions of classic Christmas carols can have as much meaning as their originals. And I'm sure there'll be other stuff we get into talking about as well. So Tylene and Glenn, welcome along to the programme.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you both in studio with me today for this special Christmassy edition of Unbelievable. Always try to do something interesting for Christmas. And when I saw your album, which you emailed me about, Tylene, I just thought, wow, that's interesting. That's a bit different. I've never come across an atheist Christmas carol album. Let's start with you, Tylene, as a newcomer to the show. You're, I think, from the US originally?
Originally, yes, Pennsylvania.
But you seem to have some kind of global presence because you're in various locations at different times of the year and things. But you happen to be in the UK at this point. Have you always been a musical person? Has that been part of your life?
Oh, yeah, definitely. From being a young kid. And then, obviously our school system's a little bit different. We have middle school and high school. Middle school and high school, I was very much into band and choir, chorus, anything, if it involved singing or music, and then theater as well, because we did musicals. So I got into acting, and if it involved music, I was there.
Great. And what's the kind of the genre that you most commonly kind of are involved in creating music around?
Avant-garde.
I saw it. So some full-on... I guess that is quite a wide genre of music in a way.
But it's kind of, avant-garde is kind of defined not by what it is, but what it isn't.
Fine. Okay. So well, I mean, you're obviously interested in creating unusual stuff because obviously this atheist Christmas album is very unusual from the title. But tell us about yourself first. You're an atheist now, obviously, yourself, but I think you actually grew up in quite a distinctly Christian background.
Yes. Yes, I did. When I was younger, we weren't, it wasn't a very devout house. My mother and I would occasionally go to church, but she was definitely Christian. Christianity was a big part of life. And then I should mention my siblings are a lot older than me. So when my sister had this boyfriend who was born again Pentecostal Christian, they started to get into that. And I did as well. And I was about 13, I think, at the time. And that's when I got really devout, became a seriously devout Christian, got baptized, everything. Mm-hmm. And then that led to, of course, in that particular church, they really encourage you to read the Bible. Mm-hmm. So I did read the Bible. And atheists always have the joke, nothing makes you an atheist faster than reading the Bible. But actually, I went in the other direction first because I was mad. I was really angry at a lot of what I was being told within that church in particular, that I was then finding out elsewhere just wasn't true. Not okay. even necessarily religious things, but just a lot of things that just were not true. And there's no historical evidence of that at all. And so I was angry, and I actually went into a more like a pagan kind of thing for a while.
Okay.
And then I just eventually came to, you know what, this is actually not, I don't believe in anything.
Right.
this is all just people. This is
right.
just us.
So you kind of had something of a conversion experience in your teenage years, and then you lost that faith as you were presented with things that you felt didn't match up with
yes.
what you were told in the church and so on. You've gone on to have a family, and this is kind of where the story of you writing this album takes place, because I guess Christmas was still a significant thing for you, obviously. You didn't...
Yes.
Just because you were atheist didn't mean you stopped enjoying the Christmas season, the festive season, and so on. But you weren't... You realised at some point, and to tell us the story here, that you didn't want necessarily to have the religious elements of the Christmas carols that typically play in the shops or in the home on CDs and so on when we're all enjoying the Christmas season. So what was the genesis of all this?
I think it... Well... I'm always singing constantly. Like, it's not, if I'm not singing, something's probably wrong.
Okay.
so, of course, you know, Christmas time, you start singing Christmas carols around the house instead. And we did, you know, of course, Christmas was a big part of what we did, obviously a very secular Christmas. But it didn't feel right because one of the things, you know, when you have your own kids and you say, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm not going to do this and I'm going to improve on that, you know, compared to how your parents raised you. And I still had that kind of anger, not just about that, but about a lot of things that they lied to me about. Like, I am not going to lie to my kids about anything ever. It's just, you know, that includes Santa.
Right.
There is no Santa.
I was going to say, does that include, you know, Santa, the Tooth Fairy, you know?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
None of it. None of it. Like, no, it's completely, this is what it is.
Okay.
And so I'm singing these lyrics and it just, I mean, my kids are, you know, really little, but it just, you know what, this isn't, I wouldn't tell them these stories and present them as truth. So why am I singing it? Like, this is a form of indoctrination almost, you know, and this isn't part of what we in this household believe or don't believe, as the case may be.
Yeah.
And so I just, it started to nag at me, and I thought, why not just have, you know, I have the ability to do this. You know, I can write music and arrange it and write lyrics and sing and play instruments, and why not?
Yeah. And these, most of these carols are old enough that there's no copyright infringement going on if you take the tunes and put new words to them and that sort of thing. But of course, there are plenty of secular, modern secular Christmas songs out there, you know, that we hear on the radio a lot of the time that aren't carols. But you weren't content just with the sort of some of the more, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer type stuff.
No, because they come from a place of commercialism.
Okay.
And that as well, that's something that, you know, in my house, we're not just consumers for the sake of consumers.
So you don't like the kind of the slightly trite commercial version of Christmas any more than you're a fan of the deeply religious version, as it were. So you're sort of creating your own version somewhere in the middle of that.
Yeah. It's, you know, family, food. And for me, because I'm a pretty full-on busy person, you know, I never stop. And then it becomes Christmas Eve, and that's it. You stop, you unplug, you are done until January 2nd.
And while we were off there, you were saying Christmas doesn't really begin until the baddie falls off the building on
Die Hard.
On Die Hard.
The ultimate
Christmas film.
Yes. Yes.
I think Glenn's nodding in agreement. We'll come back to you because we're going to obviously hear some of the songs and you'll tell us the motivation behind the particular lyrics you've chosen to implement instead of the traditional Christmas lyrics. But Glenn Scrivener joins me in studio as well. Glenn, welcome back to the program. You've been very busy in the run-up to Christmas because you, as well as obviously the speaking and writing and everything else you do a lot of video stuff these days, creative, innovative storytelling in your videos. And the big project for you in the lead-up to Christmas has been Meet the Nativity. Tell us about Meet the Nativity.
Well, as the name might suggest, it's Meet the Parents, Meets the Nativity. It's about this sort of loser boyfriend who tries to ingratiate himself with his girlfriend's family, and he fails hilariously and cringeworthily, but he goes outside and he looks up and is that a star? Oh, he starts following the star down the garden path, and this is why I've been very busy, because trying to make it look like the nativity is at the bottom of the garden path is much trickier than I had imagined in my head. So we've gone to a great deal of trouble to make the nativity happen at the bottom of the garden, and
this involved filming in a big sort of grounds of a mansion.
Yeah, £6 million mansion, and we had a sort of a crew of about 20, 25, and a cast of about 20 as well, and yes.
And an award-nominated director of the whole
Oscar
thing.
Yes, Oscar-shortlisted director who directed a professional production company.
This is the biggest production you've done in this sense so far, isn't it? You really pushed the boat out on this one.
Yeah, totally. I think last year we did so well with He Came Down, which was another sort of a Christmas film that we produced, and it did so well, and I just thought, oh, well, we've got to top that somehow. And I hope I can get off this merry-go-round
at
some point.
you're going to have to keep raising the bar each year now. But Meet the Nativity, we've been using it in our church, actually, during our Christmas services. It's four parts. You're releasing them one at a time in the 4 weeks up to Christmas. So it's a great thing, and I'm assuming there'll be a kind of a united version that will be released
on Christmas Day. Yes.
There you go. So it's still available there, of course, to be downloaded, to be looked at, to be shared as well. Lots of sharing going on Facebook as they get released each week.
That's the idea.
And the story kind of builds up. It's great fun, actually. So if you want to go and check that out, do check out the Speak Life Facebook page on.
Yeah, that's probably the best place.
Is a place to go.
Speak Life on Facebook.
MeetTheNativity.com is the website to check out those videos. Really worth sharing. Very, very well produced, I'll say that. Sometimes Christian film production doesn't have the best reputation, but Glenn is changing that because these really look great. They're really fun, very funny. If you want more on the subject of today's program, which is the Atheist Christmas album, atheistchristmas.bandcamp.com is the place to go. And I'm really looking forward to delving into the lyrics of some of the Christmas carols that we'll be talking about in the course of today's programme. If you would like to get in touch with today's show, do email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can find us, of course, online at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. You'll find links to today's show, to the podcast, to the social media as well, and you're welcome to get in touch that way too. @unbelievablejb. To tweet me, facebook.com/unbelievablejb if you want to get in touch via the Facebook page.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
So today on the programme, we're asking, is it okay to take Christ out of our Christmas carols? Well, Tylene Polly has done just that with the Atheist Christmas album. All the best traditional music with new non-religious music and lyrics is what it's all about. And we're going to be hearing some of what Tylene has been doing with this Atheist Christmas album. Glenn Scrivener is in studio to engage with Tylene today on this whole subject. Glenn's from Speak Life. Now, before we hear one of the songs, Glenn, you've had a chance to listen. What do you think about the whole project of Tylene here and her motivation? She says she wanted to be able to have the Christmassy music and feeling, but without having to essentially lie in a way as though this was a legitimate part of her belief system. What's your overall take on the whole project?
Well, I think we've had two points of agreement already. So no to Santa, that's my first point of agreement, and teaching children the truth about that.
So you agree that it's best not to kind of create some sort of Santa myth?
This could be your next debate.
It could be. This could be more controversial than this debate, frankly, actually, because I know Christians have very different views on this.
Well, very, very aware that you don't want to then have your child spoil everyone else's fun. And so we're telling Ruby it's a game, and it's a fun game that people play in which we talk about this man called Santa and all that sort of stuff. So, yes, I agree that, let's only sing the truth and let's only, surround ourselves with the truth. And I also agree about Hans Gruber and Die Hard being the greatest Christmas film. So 2 points of agreement already. And I think it's a case of taste and see, really. I I've written songs as well. I think every Christian songwriter has taken a Bob Dylan track and sort of slightly tweaked it and made it, vaguely Christian. And I think we're all doing that. We're all borrowing. And in fact, Christmas sort of gives us almost the paradigm for it. If the incarnation is about God showing up in the midst of our culture and taking on some of our cultural forms and... almost the meaning of things showing up under your noses within your own culture. That's kind of what the incarnation is. So I think what Tylene's done is sort of that kind of thing. And I think there's borrowing going on by everybody all the time. That is the creative process. You know, creativity is just forgetting your sources, as they say. So I think we're always borrowing from one another. But then I guess the question is, let's taste and see, and let's see if, you know, the lyrics without Christ.
Let's taste and see some of the lyrics. Yeah. Let's play a bit of one of the tracks. We'll start maybe with the song, well, it's your version of God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, but of course called O Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. Let's hear a bit of this song.
O rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay, for centuries we celebrate every year on this day. To keep our spirits merry, we feast, sing, dance and play. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. From near and far, joyous all they came, when others heard of all the joy the tradition gained fame. It spread around the world and became known by many names. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh,
there you go. That's Tylene's version of God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. And, of course, the original lyrics of the first verse of that go, God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay, for Jesus Christ our Saviour was born upon this day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. O tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. And your version, as we heard, runs, O rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay, for centuries we celebrate every year on this day to keep our spirits merry. We feast, sing, dance and play. O tidings of comfort and joy. And goes on to almost to comment really on the where Chris, you know, where these festivities came from and that sort of thing in the other verses. I can imagine, though, many people of faith, Tylene, saying it seems almost sacrilegious to take, you know, something that is, you know, was written and imbued with Christian significance, and the idea of the tidings of comfort and joy very specifically connected in this song to the good news of Jesus Christ coming, God among us, hope and salvation and everything else that a Christian would believe is implicit in that. And you've sort of transplanted that whole concept into a very sort of non-religious message. Mm-hmm. But so tell us what you're aiming to do in turning a song that's obviously about Jesus into a song that's about Christmas in the more general sense.
Well, when I approached this one in particular, I just kind of decided, well, it's going to be the first track on the album as well. So it kind of sets the tone in that you're going through and just saying, well, because it is true. I mean, people did celebrate that time of year before Christianity, Saturnalia, and, you know, the pagans had Yule. And so it's intrinsic to us as people that we do celebrate at that time of year. And it's the same with Easter as well. You know, there's always been celebrations in various cultures throughout history, whether that's Christian or not. And it's, you know, it's always, when you look at other religions as well, and their holidays do tend to kind of line up with the Christian ones, more or less. And so you know what? People have always been celebrating in one way or another. And so I was just kind of trying to tell the story of That, exactly. The people are always celebrating at this time of year.
The lyrics in the second verse say, from the near and far the people gathered, joyous all they came. When others heard of all the joy, the tradition gained fame. It spread around the world and became known by many names. So the sense I'm getting is that Christmas isn't unique in that sense. Christmas is just one among a variety of traditions that from pagan, other religions and everything else, which is about some sort of... light in the midst of a dark season, type of thing. Is that the way you would see it?
And yes, absolutely.
So is it your view that Christians effectively took a pagan sort of way of looking at things and used it to mould their own celebration around in that sense?
Yes.
I just want to check that this is the way you do see where our modern Christmas came from.
Well, I mean, so many things of the modern Christmas, I mean... with the exception of the Nativity, obviously, which is Christian, the Christmas tree, that's not a Christian thing. You know, that comes from Yule, I believe. Even, you know, it's you go through and look one by one, and you know, they're not necessarily anything. If you really start to think about it, it's not necessarily anything Christian about them, with the exception of the Nativity. And so it's quite questionable, actually, where any of them come from.
What's your take on this whole concept, first of all, that's being spelled out in this song, that you know, Christmas is in a sense just one among many ways in which people have celebrated and done this sort of thing at this time of year, Glenn.
Whether it's Winterval or Yule or that sort of thing. Yeah, I mean, absolutely, people have always sort of celebrated, huddled together in the darkness and waited for the days to lengthen, waited for the light to triumph over the darkness and that sort of thing. But I guess I'd just look at the tidings of comfort and joy and just ask, so tidings means news. So what is the news that's going to make me happy in the midst of the darkness? What news is giving me comfort and joy as
just
I'm in
a
the
celebration
dark?
Of you know, look, we've all come together. It's that time of year. Let's, you know, drink and eat and enjoy each other's company. And like how I end the last verse about, you know, being good to each other as well. Because I think it's a time of year when you know, we have these celebrations, it makes us happy, it makes us merry, but I think actually if we didn't have that, particularly in this part of the world, you know, where it's a bit cold and wet and damp, and we might not be particularly nice to each other without the festive spirit in place.
And I guess I'd say I think the festive spirit comes from a particular news item, and the news item being that the light has shone in the midst of the darkness. And, you know, remember, Christ our Saviour was born upon this day to save us all from Satan's power, lest we were gone astray. So that actually there is an otherworldly light that has dawned in the midst of the darkness, and therefore, there's comfort, there's joy, there's something to cling on to.
Yeah.
And I just wonder whether celebrating celebration is sustainable.
Right.
If you know what I mean? I want to celebrate something that elicits that celebratory kind of response from me. Or I want to sing about something that's, because of its aesthetic appeal, because of its just joy-giving nature in and of itself, it calls forth the song. It calls forth the joy.
Right.
I guess the question for you that tied in is as an atheist, where does the meaning of the celebration come from? For a Christian, obviously, like Glenn, it's very clear that the thing he's celebrating, the thing that we can be joyful about at Christmas is Jesus Christ, God with us, and all of the rest of that. Whereas for an atheist, what is the... I guess it's for me, if and I don't mean to be critical here, but when I look at your songs, they feel Christmassy and they sound Christmassy, but it's a bit like wrapping, like taking all the wrapping paper off a Christmas present and inside you find, oh, there's nothing actually there. Because it's like what you're celebrating is actually just, let's just try and get on with each other, folks. Is that kind of what it boils down to in the end, I suppose, is my question?
No, not really. You know, because I immensely enjoy Christmas. And I know many atheists who do immensely enjoy Christmas. I mean, we think it's fantastic. And, I guess that light that you're talking, I think for us it just comes from within, because as I've said a few times throughout promoting this album, I want to package this in a way that fits this format a little bit better.
It's all right, you can be honest. You really can, and I can always edit this afterwards.
Yeah, she's been doing a predominantly atheist podcast.
That's all right. We have plenty of atheists who listen to Unbelievable, and we're pretty thick-skinned on this program. You won't offend us. Please don't be worried.
For us, it's just, you know, everything is what you make it.
Mm.
And if you don't put the effort in, then no, it's just going to be another day.
Sure.
And, oh, we got up and some people were celebrating and, oh, let's go have a meal and go to bed. It's not anything other than a day off work. You've got to make it what it is.
Mm.
And, you know, Christmas doesn't just happen whether you're a Christian or an atheist or anything. Someone has put the time and the care and the love into preparing everything, with the decorations, the food. I mean, traditional Christmas cakes, how many months in advance do they start?
Yeah,
you know, it's a lot of love that goes into making Christmas. Mm. And, you know, for us, the love, I think, is just love of our families, our friends.
Before we go to a break, Glenn, do you want to come back on this? And we'll hopefully hear another song after a quick break.
Yeah, I just guess what will call forth praise and joy and comfort for me is news of something beyond family, because while family is, from one angle, the greatest thing about Christmas, it's also the worst thing about Christmas. You know what I mean? Because, you know, we're like porcupines huddling together in the dark, and we've got spikes, and we hurt each other, and, you know.
Well, fair enough,
and
yeah,
at some point after Christmas lunch, we all retreat to Facebook and tell everyone what we really think about our families. And you know, I make a joke of it, but there's a serious point as well, that actually, if my only hope is within, or my only hope is my family, then I'm actually my biggest problem as well. You know, like, no one has sabotaged their own happiness better than I have in my life. No one sabotaged their own success better than I have. I'm so frustrated. And then if you get too close to me, I'll sabotage your happiness and your success. And so if the hope is from within, I don't think that's as hopeful a proposition as is there a light from on high that's dawned that in spite of my darkness, I can be loved and I can be okay? Do you know?
I agree completely.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, I don't know if this is me in particular, but yeah, I mean, I do. I struggle with that all the time. The fact that it comes from here, inside,
right.
Everything that propels me in life. And sometimes, yeah, that gets a bit dim and I get a bit tired.
And you know how flawed you are as anyone else is.
Yeah, exactly.
In that sense. We're going to go to a quick break. Really interesting stuff. We're talking about the Atheist Christmas album. It's been created by Tylene Polly, who's here on the show to tell us about it, in conversation with the very Christmassy Glenn Scrivener, who's our Christian guest on the programme today. He is wearing Rudolph as a Christmas jumper. If you're not able to see it, you can go. We're releasing a couple of clips as well of today's programme. Go to the Unbelievable website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable, to find out more about that. We'll be back in a couple of minutes' time. We're on air with broadcasting legend Jeremy Vine in the latest Premier Christianity magazine, as he tells us how he lost his faith and then found it again, and life behind the mic on his radio and TV programmes. Plus, we profile three of the UK's fastest growing churches as they share their secrets on why their congregations are multiplying members. And as 2018 begins, read about five spiritual practices that could renew your relationship with God in the new year. All that plus news, reviews and your favourite columnists. Ask for a free copy of the January edition, premierchristianity.com/freesample. Welcome back to today's very Christmassy version of Unbelievable. This is the programme where Christians and non-Christians get together to dialogue and debate. And a really interesting Christmassy edition of the show today, asking, is it okay to take Christ out of Christmas carols? If you can stick with us this afternoon here on Premier Christian Radio, got a great edition of The Profile coming up between 4 and 5 this afternoon. I'm in conversation with Andy Crouch, who's a US religious commentator, Christian leader, author, and it's just a fascinating discussion we had sitting down talking to each other. One of my guests, though, on today's programme has been a guest on that programme as well. Glenn Scrivener joins us. He's an evangelist with Speak Life, regularly reaches out to secular audiences through creative online videos. In fact, a segment of your profile interview with us from a few weeks ago went viral on our Facebook page, Glenn. I'm sure you've been aware of this.
It yeah, is very annoying. Very annoying. Just 90 seconds off the cuff and it's got more views than our massive Christmas production.
I know. I did kind of feel a bit like that. But it's had, yeah, I mean, I think it's heading on at the time of recording to 400,000 views on Facebook of this 90-second kind of encapsulation of the gospel, which was really interesting and obviously got a lot of shares since we put it out on our Facebook page, which has been really interesting. But as I say, Meet the Nativity is the big Christmas production that you've been involved in. And you're here to talk to Tylene on the show today. Tylene, an atheist musician who's created the Atheist Christmas album, which we heard one of the tracks from earlier on in the programme. And we're asking today on Unbelievable, is it okay to take Christ out of Christmas carols in the way that Tylene has? Be interested in your responses to today's programme. You can email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can leave your thoughts on the show at the webpage as well, where you can download the programme and listen back. premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. What do you think about Tylene's de-Christed Christmas carols? If that's the right way of putting it. But it's great to have you with us both here on the programme. I should also mention, actually, I forgot to mention it earlier on, Glenn, very glad to say he's going to be joining us for Unbelievable, the conference 2018. Saturday the 19th of May is the date to ring fence in your diary here in London. If you're able to come along, Glenn will be talking about creative evangelism and how to have the kinds of conversations that we're having today, actually, fruitful, substantive conversations with non-Christians. Tylene, coming back to you, I think maybe let's play another song, okay, and that'll give us a launch pad to talk about another aspect of what you're doing with this particular album. Why don't we play the song called Lost in the Snow, or at least the second half of it, because this is really a medley between your version of O Little Town of Bethlehem and We Three Kings. So let's hear the part of Lost in the Snow that's the your take on We Three Kings.
We are lost in the snow. Which way is home? We do not know. Find our tracks and we'll find our way back. Following our footprints. Star of wonder, star so bright.
Go. This one of the tracks off the Atheist Christmas album by Tylene Polly. She's here in the studio with Unbelievable to talk about it with Glenn Scrivener. And again, you've taken a traditional Christmas carol, We Three Kings, in that section of this one at least. And interestingly, it's still about people searching and looking, and in the way that, in a sense, the Magi were looking for the light as well themselves, being guided by the star. You still mention the star in your one. Was that intentional, that you wanted to kind of evoke that sense of journeying and wandering and, as you say, being lost in the snow, looking for home and seeing the light eventually?
Yes, actually, one of the obstacles I have with a lot of these songs, in particular, All Holy Night, which my version is O Christmas Eve, it's not just the notes. The words themselves have such power on those particular notes that it is difficult to replace it with any other word without losing that power, like with O Holy Night, fall on your knees, that note on fall, you cannot take that with any other word. Trust me, I've tried.
Yeah. So do you keep fall on your knees, do you, in your version? Or?
In my version, it's fall flakes of snow.
Fall flakes of snow, that's
yes.
It. Though it was interesting to say that you still left in the word divine in at least in this transcript I've got of O Holy Night or O Christmas Eve. O Night Divine, the night before. You don't actually believe in divinity, though, do you?
No, but I think that divine can take on multiple meanings. So, like, you know, you have some chocolate and you say, ooh, that's divine.
Oh, I see. So it's more in the, yeah.
We did actually argue about this in the studio. And like, oh, I don't know. Should I keep this word?
Does it count as an atheist Christian sour if you mention the word divine? But back to this one, because as I say, it's sort of, I don't know if you know if this comes from your own experience being lost in the snow or something like that, but there's this sense that you wanted to capture that feeling of searching and looking and,
yes,
and everything else. And I guess that was a good vehicle with which to do it. What's your take on this? This was one you particularly wanted to discuss, Glenn.
Yeah, it was really interesting to hear you say that Star of Wonder made it in because what else can you sing? Star of Wonder? Like, yeah. You have to sing that at that point. Because what's interesting in the lyrics is actually what guides them home is finding their tracks and we'll find our way back, following our footprints.
Mm-hmm.
So what's very interesting to me is in the song, where is their gaze? Their gaze is not up at the star to find their way home. Their gaze is down at their feet.
Yeah, the star's actually providing just the light so that they can see.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they've come this way before,
mm-hmm,
so they know that they can do it. They can, you know, struggle through. And that line, it's a great line, not intended, but we're intrepid.
Mm.
that just leapt out at me, and I just thought, well, that is a life philosophy, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
We're not intended, but we're intrepid,
yeah.
And it's cold, but we're going to find our way home through our own, you know,
yeah,
cunning and goodwill. And
I sense a butt coming, Glenn.
I guess in terms of taste and see, and I think that's a very compelling vision for life, that here we are lost in the snow, but together can we find the strength to link arms and make the best of it and make our way home,
mm-hmm,
whatever home is, because we're not intended,
mm-hmm,
so we're going to have to make up whatever home is.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's one way of telling a story and creating a community. And I think it is the opposite of Christmas, because the Christmas thing is there's a light from on high.
Yes.
And we are intended, and we're not particularly intrepid. We're quite cunning at finding ways of getting lost. We're very good at that. And someone comes to find us.
Yeah.
And that's Christmas. Here we are, lost in the valley of the shadow of death, as Isaiah 9 says. And but to us a child is born, to us a son is given in the middle of the valley of the shadow. So I guess if we kind of marinate in your story,
mm-hmm,
for a long time,
mm-hmm,
I wonder what Christmas will happen. Like, I wonder what kind of Christmas we'll get down the track. And I think it will be, you know, you've already said that, you know, Christmas is what you make it. It's down to you to make Christmas happen. Whereas I think that the message of hope is we've made a mess of it and we need grace. We need mercy. We need a savior. We need light, mm-hmm, from on high to dawn on us because we're a bit lost.
Yeah.
We are lost in the snow.
Yeah.
And we need someone from home to come and find us. And I just think that will lead to a different kind of Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, you were a Christian at one time.
I was,
Tylene.
Yes.
What made you decide that that was not the way life is, that we don't need the Saviour, that Christmas is all about coming to Earth, the Saviour who came to Earth?
Well, you know, as Glenn's talking here, I'm actually, I'm realising that the real difference between the two of you and I is that you're kind of looking around and saying, my God, we need help.
Mm.
And you're looking to your religion and your beliefs and saying, yes, we all need this because we need help.
We can't do it on our own, essentially.
Where I look around and I say, you all need to help yourselves.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. You just need to sort yourself out. That's essentially the fundamental. I mean, I'm sure, like, even, you know, if we compare our morals as human beings, we're probably very similar.
Mm.
That essentially is the difference.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess
one of the differences as well is that we, you know, where you're carols that often land up is, mm-hmm. is about peace and harmony and mm-hmm. unity and goodwill and everything else. It's just Glenn has a very different conception of how you get to that
yes.
from you.
Yes.
Which is, whereas yours, it's about we can do this together in our own power, in our own strength. We weren't intended to be here, but we're going to make the best of it.
Mm.
Glenn's view is we're fundamentally incapable. If you look at our track record
yes.
of making it, of doing that, and we do need help from somewhere else. That's what the whole Christmas story is.
Yes.
Is that what I'm getting is the fundamental difference of,
yeah,
and, of how and you get to this peace yeah. and goodwill that we're all agreed on is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Tylene just encapsulated it really well. It reminded me of Terry Pratchett, the atheist, sort of saying about what are we? Are we ascendant apes or are we fallen angels? You mm. know, and the yeah. sort of the more religious view is we're fallen angels, you know, mm-hmm. obviously speaking metaphorically, rather than ascendant apes. And have we climbed up to the top of the pile by our own strength, or have we fallen and need help? And I think, for me, joy comes when I get not what I deserve, when I get better than I deserve. You know, right. my experiences of tidings of comfort and joy have been when I'm seen for who I am in all my mess and loved anyway.
Yeah.
Like, ah, right. And I think that's the best of the Christian story. The best of the Christian story is that here I am in my mess. Oh, I'm loved anyway. Someone has come to find me. Even though I ran away from home, I got lost in the snow, you know, and someone came and found me.
Yeah.
And the fire's on. And he picks me up and he carries me home. That is joy. And I think it has a different quality of joy to I've struggled through the blizzard.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've brought in the firewood and I've made it happen.
Mm.
And I think one Christmas will lead to a lot more sense of gratitude than the other,
mm-hmm.
perhaps. That if I, yeah, if it's about mercy that's come to me in an undeserving way,
mm-hmm.
I'll be more grateful than if it's something that I've made happen.
Right.
And well, I wonder if gratitude could get lost.
What's your response to that, Tylene?
I think that would be on a very person-by-person basis, because obviously, you know, atheists are a very mixed lot.
Mm-hmm.
interestingly, though, I mean, when it comes to me, gratitude is, for me, is a big thing. Mm. Because I don't think you can really enjoy life unless you're appreciating the very, very simple things of life.
And who are you grateful to?
No one. It's just gratitude in general. Or, you know, or sometimes, you know, maybe it is a specific person. Maybe, you know, just using, you know, little example, maybe someone held the door open for you when your arms were completely full of shopping.
Mm.
You're grateful to that person.
Yeah.
Sure. And, you know, and it's not a chair saying, no, you're genuinely grateful. Mm. Thank you. You don't know what that just saved me. It's really kind of the practice of random acts of kindness, even if they're very, very small. And I think that you can find ways to be grateful and also to make other people feel grateful as well. If you're doing little nice things for people all the time without expecting anything in return as such. What's interesting is even though I don't have any set beliefs, I think I probably am quite influenced by Eastern religions rather.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, they do kind of have this principle of
karma.
No, not karma as such, but as these ideas that, you know, happiness comes from no longer wanting.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, accepting what is. And so there is a tint of that to everything in my life, really. This is the present, the here, the now. And we have to, you know, we have to be grateful for, you know, anything. You know, even you look at history and like people will say, here's a very controversial one I'll just throw in, you know, but like World War II and the Nazis.
Mm.
Oh, terrible, terrible, terrible. But how many inventions happened because of that? How many actual good things did come
it's
out of
World
War II?
It's an interesting perspective, yeah.
The NHS probably wouldn't be here,
you
know, if it wasn't for the aftermath of World War II. So it's nothing is ever black and white like that. Everything's always kind of in the gray, and there's good and bad to everything. And so, you know, it's a different, it's just a much different way, I think, of looking at things in the world, and definitely not part of my upbringing. It's something that came much later on.
Sure. Anything before we go to another track?
I think Glenn? One way of looking at the, so for instance, if great things have come out of terrible evil, One way of looking at that is to say, well, nothing is black and white, and then it's all sort of different shades of grey. I think another way of looking at that is that there is a redemption of evil, that there can be, as you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you come out changed, and there is feasting joy at the end of the valley,
yes,
and that sort of thing. But I just wonder if, therefore, the Christian story gives you the tools to look at that in a better way, so that it's not all shades of grey, that, you know, the Nazis are not on the same level as the NHS, and I know you're not saying that, but if we do say that there's no such thing as black or white, it's all shades of grey, it becomes more difficult to condemn the evil, and it becomes more difficult then to separate out what it is we're celebrating at Christmas and what it is that's great about humanity. So I, for that reason, I'm grateful for the Christian tradition, in which you're able to say, yeah, darkness is really dark, but we're on our way through the valley and out the other side to something much better. And I think the secular version of things is not that we're heading somewhere ultimately much better. The secular version is that we are headed towards, you know, the heat death of the universe and eternal extinction. But, you know, the flavoured lattes at Starbucks are pretty nice. So
yeah.
In the meantime, look, let's hear another track, because this is perhaps the most personal track, in a sense, on the record, Tylene. This is your version of Silent Night, which, of course, is all about the birth of Christ and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and so on, is what all the lyrics are about. But yours has an equally sort of personal level as a mum. You talk about that in this particular one. Let's hear this track. Is that your own voice, Tylene?
Yeah.
It's demonstrating your range there. Is that you, a soprano? Is that the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I got a bit of a up there in the clouds.
Yeah. Well, lovely. And obviously, very familiar tune. It is the song Silent Night, Holy Night. The original lyrics, of course, round yon virgin mother and child, holy infant so tender and mild, sleep in heavenly peace. Yours becomes... Silent Night, Christmas Night, all is calm, all is bright, sleeply soundly, mother and child, precious infant, so tender and mild, sleep in blissful peace. I don't know whether your children do sleep in blissful peace most of the time, or whether that's just an aspiration, really.
Oh, well, when they are sleeping, it's blissful for us.
I mean, obviously, though, the motivation for this one? Obviously, this was written, I think, when your youngest was very young.
Yeah, he was just a little baby, yeah. It's actually, I mean, obviously, I, a female, am singing it, but it's actually from the father's perspective it's written.
Okay.
And My husband's really quite, you know, he's a real dad, you know, and, you know, like when they were born, you know, and he's holding them and he's crying and, you know, he is really, you know, he just loves our boys to death. And, I think, it was really inspired just by seeing how emotional he gets over our little boys.
Yeah.
You know, and how he just absolutely adores them.
And so when you say the most precious child on earth, this is obviously a personal reaction.
Your personal, because of course everybody's, your children are.
Yeah, exactly.
To you, they are the most precious children on earth, and not to anybody else except for maybe the grandparents. But
and do you, I mean, people often say, whether they're religious or not, that Christmas is about the children, you know, and obviously for many people Christmas comes alive in a new way when they have children, because of all the excitement and the festivity that comes with being a child and waking up on Christmas morning and everything else. Did you find, I mean, it was really having children yourself that sparked this whole project for you as well, wasn't it? Because you wanted to pass on a different kind of message from Christmas to your children. What's your reaction to this one, Glenn?
Beautiful, sweet.
Thank you. Loved it.
And I didn't know it was written from the dad's perspective, but that makes even more sense of it. That's really cool. And I just wonder whether if you take away the infant with a capital I, that you have to sort of infantilize Christmas. It has to become about children, because that's kind of the best thing about family times and family Christmases. And they get massively excited about the, you know, the wrapping paper. Who knows what's inside the present, but they're massively excited. They, you know, she's almost 3 years old, and she's now at the age where she can understand the future, and she can understand that there's a sense of anticipation and something amazing is happening and Christmas is coming. And I can see why, absent the infant with a capital I, then the infants become the absolute heart and soul of Christmas.
The center of Christmas, yeah.
But I wonder if that, yeah, how can you stop it becoming infantilized as this celebration that's all about the children? And, you know, I know my wife and I, we struggled for 12 years with infertility, you know, before having a child. And Christmas was a really hard time of the year, because if we're constantly being told, oh, it's all about the children, we kept on saying, well, we're working on it.
And it can be equally difficult for people who don't have a partner even.
Well, exactly.
So it's often the it's about the family, quote unquote, and you may not have a family necessarily.
Yeah. And then, you know, 500,000 families have lost someone this year. There's an empty chair at Christmas lunch because, you know, 500,000 people have died in the UK. There's 250,000 elderly people who are alone, you know, this Christmas. 80,000 children who are homeless this Christmas. And therefore, I think it's so important to have a hope that is beyond the nuclear family, and that is beyond let's huddle together in the warmth. The weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. So let it snow. And let's celebrate our family, because for so many people, that's not what they have and that's not what they experience.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why I think that the Christmas vision of a people who don't have it all together actually gives more hope to more people than having the Christmas that's about the kids.
I guess Glenn's point is that for him, Christmas is about hope, and therefore it's about God giving everyone hope. His worry, I think, is for the atheist, hope is very much the luck of the draw. Did you get a child that you can lavish love on?
Right.
Were you in the circumstances where you can enjoy Christmas and everything else? Not everyone will have that. So is hope... Hope, in a sense, becomes, whether you got lucky in life or not.
No.
Do you just disagree with that, Tylene?
I think obviously, that Christmas can be difficult if you've lost someone. Obviously, there are people who spend it alone. Actually, there's one track on the album that I wrote, and it kind of talks about that. It's, you know, everyone has someone on Christmas except me, and it's, you know, someone who's spending it alone. And, you know, that is, you know, suicide rates always go up. It is.
Especially in the new year, straight after Christmas.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, I think for people who find themselves in those situations, you know, and I'm very sympathetic to that, because I have a long history of depression, and you know, I understand what that's like and how difficult that can be. And so I think when it does come to this time of year, for the people who do find themselves in this situation, I think, you know, they have to be willing to accept someone else's charity. And because there usually is an invitation there for someone to, you know, I've definitely said no, you to friends who I knew were going to be, no, you come celebrate with us. come, you know, join our meal and everything, and you make them feel welcome and you bring them in to your home.
As an atheist, what does hope mean to you then? Because obviously Glenn very clearly knows what that means to him. What does Christmas hope mean to the atheist?
Christmas hope, specifically in regard to Christmas?
Just generally,
or
I
in
suppose.
General? Hope is just still thinking that there's a way. That there, you know, hope only ends when you see no possible way out.
Hmm.
And as long as you can keep finding a way, keep finding a solution, there is hope.
Do you want to add anything before we go to our final break, then?
And that hope runs out. With every heartbeat, it runs out by one, doesn't it? You know?
I don't know. Sometimes there are moments where you think, God, but then, you know, something's got to give. But then you come up with something else.
You do. But the doors are locked and no one gets out alive. You know, that's
well, that's true. Nobody gets out alive. That is true. We are all doomed to death.
Yeah. Unless a savior comes.
Well,
yeah.
That's it. You're both living in very different worldviews. And so inevitably you have very different ways of dealing with what the inevitabilities are of those worldviews. We're going to go to our final break and we'll be just wrapping up this conversation today on Unbelievable. Is it okay to take the Christ out of Christmas? Tylene Polly and Glenn Scrivener have joined me on the show today. And make sure as well, Glenn mentioned the numbers of people who are alone at Christmas. Well, Premier has been running a special campaign over the Christmas period called Christmas Alone, where we're just letting people know all the different places where you can find a welcome this Christmas day, and churches that are opening up their doors to anyone who wants to come in. That's premier.org.uk/Christmas Alone. You don't have to be alone this Christmas wherever you are in the UK. We'll be back in a moment's time with a final part of today's Unbelievable.
If you want to have a massive reason why human beings are special, here it is. God became one.
We can be part of God's plan to bring hope to a hopeless generation.
We're living in an exciting time to be a follower of Jesus. The golden age of Christianity, ladies and gentlemen.
We live in a universe that has a story that is ultimately about love.
There's a God-shaped hole in the heart of every person. It can only be filled by God, made known through Jesus Christ.
Hear the world's leading Christian thinkers make the case for Christ at Unbelievable, the Conference 2017. Now available not only on DVD, but also as a digital download. Order online at premier.org.uk/shop.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Unbelievable. I'm Justin Brierley, and this is the programme where we get Christians and non-Christians talking to each other. We create conversations that matter. It's great fun. And today, our Christmas edition, we're talking about atheist Christmas carols. Back to Tylene and Glenn in just a moment's time to conclude their conversation. If you're able to join us at the same time next week, we're going to be talking about apologetics generally, defence of the Christian faith through rational argument and evidence. And we're going to be asking, is apologetics a dead end? That was one of the conclusions of Myron B. Penner's book, The End of Apologetics. And he's going to be in discussion on that whole area with Sean McDowell next week on the programme. Sean, along with his father, Josh McDowell, have penned a new edition of Evidence That Demands a Verdict, a classic apologetics book. And so Sean and Myron are going to be joining me on next week's programme. Don't forget, you can find Unbelievable as a podcast anywhere around the world. Do share it on with friends and let them know about it. Last week's programme, by the way, on Hinge, it was great to see that the Hinge podcast that Corey Markham and Drew Sokol have worked on together and came on to tell us about last week did really well in the iTunes charts. I think it went up to number one on the day of its release in the religion and spirituality iTunes charts in America, which is wonderful. So well done, those guys, and do make sure to keep downloading their journey as they continue it together on the Hinge podcast. We'll be getting some of your feedback to recent editions of the programme towards the end of today's show. And I'd also like to tell you about the Unbelievable discussion group, which meets regularly in London. I was able to be at the October meeting to talk about Unbelievable, the book. But they've got another one coming up in January. That's Monday the 8th at 7:30 p.m. It's at their usual King's Cross pub location. And it's a prosecution lawyer talks about witnesses and evidence. It's Frances Janusz, who's actually been on the show not that long ago. She was scheduled to cover the topic apparently in the summer, but couldn't do it due to a last minute matter. So they're thrilled she's been able to reschedule. And it's all about applying modern legal methods to the resurrection. Now, Frances is an atheist, so I'm sure you'll be hearing about it from her perspective, but they do encourage Christians and non-believers to get together to discuss the talks after they've heard them. So that'll be Monday the 8th at the Somerstown Coffee House in King's Cross at 7:30 p.m. Find out more at the Unbelievable Christian and Skeptic Discussion Group on meetup.com. I'm excited to be joined by Andy Crouch straight after Unbelievable today. I sat down with him for an edition of The Profile. He told me about his life and faith. Andy is a former editor at Christianity Today in the USA, as well as an author and speaker. So in some ways, we have somewhat similar backgrounds, him in the USA, me here in the UK. But we're talking about culture making and particularly Andy's latest book as well, The TechWise Family. So look out for that between 4 and 5 here on Premier Christian Radio, available, of course, on The Profile podcast as well. If you go look for that in iTunes or wherever you download your podcast from, it's worth listening to loads of great interviews and different people from all walks of life talking about their Christian journey. Time now to wrap up today's discussion on the Atheist Christmas Carol album. So it's been a really fun discussion on Unbelievable today, asking whether it's okay to take Christ out of Christmas carols. Tylene Polly's new album, The Atheist Christmas Album, is all the best traditional Christmas music with non-religious lyrics. We've been hearing some of it on today's programme. Again, if you want to get hold of it for yourself, atheistchristmas.bandcamp.com. And Glenn Scrivener, evangelist with Speak Life, has been engaging with Tylene on the show today, and not too late to view his fabulous four-part comedy series for Christmas, Meet the Nativity, meetthenativity.com or speaklife.org.uk to find that. You might want to play the whole thing out in church in this Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. So it's been a really fun discussion, folks. Tylene, I guess not all atheists are averse to having Christmas music on. I've even heard people like Richard Dawkins, you know, one of the world's best known atheists, say, I love going to a Christmas service because it's about the feelings, and it doesn't matter, it doesn't, not too bothered that there's references to Jesus and the TV story, sort of lets that wash over him. It's the atmosphere that people are interested in very often. And you will find a lot of non-Christians turning up to church at Christmas, interestingly. If you're ever going to find somebody who doesn't normally darken the door of a church, it's probably Christmas time when all of those feelings, that nostalgia, you know, sort of makes someone cross the threshold into a carol service or whatever it might be. I have many atheist friends who say love Christmas, and I don't have a problem with there being Christmassy Christian references within it. Doesn't apply to me. Happy for other people to believe that. And presumably you're happy for people who take that approach as well. Just didn't work for you as such. I mean, would you like to see ultimately Christmas completely devoid of the religious part, or are you happy for it just to be some people celebrate it like you, other people celebrate it like Glenn?
I mean, as someone who believes in personal choice, obviously people should be able to do whatever they want on Christmas, and it's not my business to tell anybody else. You know, as long as you're not hurting anybody, then no, I mean, you know, everybody should be able to celebrate it. I mean, but, you know, yeah, of course, there is part of me that thinks, oh, wouldn't it be great if the whole world didn't believe in anything? Because then we could, but you probably have the same belief, wouldn't it be great if the whole world were Christian? So, you know, that's just...
But when you say, wouldn't it be great if the whole world didn't believe in anything, you don't strike me as someone who doesn't believe in anything. These songs are full of your beliefs about,
well,
believe
in themselves
of things.
Belief in themselves, their own ability, their, you know, something happens, a transition inside of you. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a very long period of time and a kind of a dark road to walk, actually.
Yeah.
When you do start to realize that if I'm going to make anything happen in my life, I've got to do it. No one is going to do it for me. And so, yeah, I would say if there is a belief that I have, that that's it.
Some people I know have become Christians because of their children, interestingly. There's one person that I've spoken to about this who was an atheist, very much you know, in the way you're an atheist, but it was having a child that caused her to reassess what this child is, and she couldn't handle the idea that all the love and extraordinary emotion and she felt for this child was simply ultimately boiled down to chemical reactions. That's ultimately, that really love is an illusion, and that we're just sort of procreation machines driven by our DNA or whatever. She said that just didn't ring true with what she felt about her child. And that was the start of a journey for her towards Christian faith. Has having a child, and the way you describe it so movingly in that carol we heard, Silent Night, in any way made you question, are we just physical beings ultimately? There's nothing more ultimately than the chemistry that makes us up.
Nope. It's just the chemistry.
It is. It's ultimately all the love you feel is an illusion.
Well, biochemistry and everything that's going on in here, it's fascinating stuff. Basically, I do think that it is just, you know, this bond that happens because we are kind of biologically, you know, we have
evolutionarily set up to have those feelings.
To have those feelings, because if not, my God, you'd just kill them. You know?
Fair enough.
No one would get out of infancy. No way.
Right. I mean, and I think you're being incredibly honest at that point, because I think that's, I do think that's what, if you really don't believe there's anything else going on mm-hmm. than matter in motion and the blind forces of physics and evolution or whatever, that ultimately, yeah, it is just kind of what's been ingrained into us by DNA and mm-hmm. And chemistry and whatever. I personally find it very difficult to reconcile mm-hmm. my belief in love and joy and justice and all manner of other things that I find to be the most fundamentally important things about life, mm-hmm. that they are really just a biochemical illusion. Mm-hmm. That's my take. Mm-hmm. Glenn, I suspect, feels similarly. I might
take it in that direction, in which case I'd sort of appeal to Tylene the artist and say, Tylene the artist, these feelings of joy and beauty and goodness and truth, are they biochemistry that boils down to physics? Mm. The Christian view is that there is a goodness and a beauty and a truth that has both predated and produced the universe, which mm. means that love and beauty and goodness and truth are before and behind and underneath and infusing all things, and that we are in touch with that as we sing, as mm-hmm. we create, as we do all those sorts of things. So that would be one way I would take the childbearing thing and how it awakens us to whether there's mm-hmm. something more. And another thing I do about the child rearing thing as well is that when you hold your child in your arms, you realize that life is a gift, that you didn't kind of earn this thing, that this thing has kind of come to you and that life has been given to you. And as you say, you know, if they weren't so darn adorable, you'd throttle them, right? Because it takes like 18 years of that mm-hmm. until this kid is going to be able to stand on their own 2 feet and find their way through the snow back home.
Yes.
And fight and strive and do all that. So as a Christian, I completely believe in fighting and striving and, you know, taking all the opportunities that you can. But I also recognize that it's taken the suffering and the sacrifice of someone else.
Yeah.
To raise me to the point where I stand on my own 2 feet mm-hmm. and am able to be the self-sufficient person that I imagine myself to be. But of course, I'm not self-sufficient. There has been the sacrifice and the suffering, the striving of someone else
yes.
that has enabled me to now stand on my own 2 feet. And again, I plug that into the Christian story and I say, absolutely, there's striving and the struggle and people should, you know, stand up for themselves and use whatever is within them.
Mm-hmm.
But behind that, there has been a gift of life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's someone to be grateful to because they have given me what I could not earn for myself.
Mm.
And that really is the Christmas story, that into the midst of the darkness in which I contribute nothing, something has been given to me. And childbearing is kind of like that. Out of darkness has come this, you know, amazing gift.
Mm.
So again, I just plug that into the story of, is life a gift or is life earned?
Did you feel you had to be grateful to someone or something when your children were born, Tylene, or do you not think of it in that way?
Really think of it in that way at all. No, not really. Although when you say about, you know, how you, someone else struggled
right.
for you to
mm-hmm.
be here.
Right.
And, you know, I think of that in terms of like my own parents
mm-hmm.
and the cool. things that they did and struggled. And like when I was younger, and like I said, I was into anything, music whatsoever. Mm. And I mean, she worked third shift so that, mm-hmm. you know, overnight, and then she'd sleep a bit while I was in school, and then all evening long, she, because we lived in a very rural place, she just drove me from place to place to place to place for rehearsals and practices and lessons. And I ran that woman ragged. You know? And if she hadn't done that, I would not be here right now, the musician, the singer, the actress, the artist.
Mm.
That is because of her saying, I have no life. I have this teenager.
And that was love on your mum's part.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
But was it just a biochemical illusion? That's the question I'm kind of inevitably drawn to.
Well, I mean, I think it's a biochemical thing. I mean, anything that came out of her, she would have loved. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, she is religious, you know. Okay, so right. You know, when I of
so
course
for her, she does celebrate the traditional kind of Christmas.
Yeah. Oh yes, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, she. Yeah, she struggles with the fact that I don't believe in anything. In fact, the album is actually dedicated to her, even though she's not
right.
an atheist, because she got really excited about it, because she hates my music otherwise, because it's all...
But at least she could recognize some tunes here.
But she, she's like, no, this is good. And she kind of overlooks the fact that it's not religious anymore.
She sings the other words.
Yeah. But she just gets excited because that's... her baby, as she would say. Right. So.
Yeah. Look, it's been really fun, this chat today. Thank you both for coming in and having this engaging discussion. Again, if you want to check out the album, the Atheist Christmas album by Tylene, atheistchristmas.bandcamp.com. You can listen to the tracks there, buy the album. Speaklife.org.uk for Glenn Scrivener, our other guest on the show today, or meetthenativity.com for the videos that have been doing the rounds this Christmas. Really fun stuff. Share them on your Facebook. Make sure to play them in your church if you can before Christmas is over. And what can I say? But thank you both, folks, for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been great to have you.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you.
Glenn, looking forward to you joining us in the coming year at Unbelievable, the conference.
Excellent.
In May. That would be great fun. Saturday, the 19th of May, if you want to meet Glenn in person. And that'll be a great day. We're going to be releasing the ticketing and more details in the new year. But for now, thank you for listening to this special Christmassy edition of Unbelievable. And we'll be hearing what you had to say about some recent editions of the show in just a moment.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, do email unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can tweet me at unbelievablejb or via Facebook, facebook.com/unbelievablejb. Look forward to hearing from you, however you like to get in touch with the show. And don't forget, you can also add your comments underneath the latest edition of the programme. There's always a lively debate in the comments section underneath each show online. premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. That's also your one-stop shop if you want links to Unbelievable the book. You can also find signed copies, a free sample chapter, links to the audiobook and much more besides from the Unbelievable Book website, unbelievablebook.co.uk. Let's go to some of your feedback, because I wasn't really able to get to much last week, and it's been a couple of weeks since we had that very interesting programme on whether Jesus was a failed apocalyptic prophet. This was Matt Hartke, who is an agnostic now, having lost his faith and come to believe Jesus wasn't in fact the Messiah, he didn't rise from the dead, that he was a failed apocalyptic prophet. And he was in conversation with Andrew Perryman, who takes a very different view and has done a lot of work in the whole area of what Jesus meant, what was being signified when he talked about the idea that these things would happen within the lifetime of his followers and so on. Here's Bruce Hoffert, who was very critical of the show, says, "I've mostly enjoyed your show over the past couple of years, but it seems lately you're bringing on guests that have no interest in trying to understand the other person's point of view. I'm speaking specifically about the Christian apologists you have on. Today's episode," and you're referring here to the failed apocalyptic prophet episode, "was another example of a Christian apologist without a leg to stand on who just kept blabbering on, reaching for straws and not impressing anyone in the process. It's becoming all too familiar and may cause you to lose this listener in the process. I'd rather have debates like the ones you've had with Matt Dillahunty, for example, debating a Christian with something unique to say, if there is such a person. Something is missing in your show. I think you've lost your way. You should be searching for the truth, not trying to make all the Christians feel good about themselves." Well, I'm sorry you feel like that, Bruce. Yours was the only email that really was critical in that way, because everyone else, whether non-Christian or Christian, felt that Andrew Perryman was a very sympathetic, helpful and constructive opposite number to Matt Hartke. So obviously you felt very different to that. But let's go to some of the positive reactions to that show. Andrew White has been a guest on the show a couple of times over the years, and I knew this would appeal to you, Andrew, because I had a feeling Matt's story was somewhat similar to your own. You say, "Just listen to the excellent show on whether Jesus was a failed apocalyptic prophet. What a great show. My journey on this very subject is so close to that of Matthew. It was this whole area, as you might recall, in 2009, when I spoke about my path in this, that was the nail in the coffin and cracked my view of the Bible's inspiration. I later outlined my story and discussed preterism in some depth on the Atheist 101 podcast a year or so back. It's fascinating interesting, as I also later started to crack on the resurrection, just as Matthew did. It was so uncanny to hear him speak, as I was going, yes, that's how I felt, point by point. I was also, for a period, a preterist until full preterism knocked on my door, and it all seemed so absurd as a conclusion. But I was influenced greatly by N.T. Wright's work on past fulfilment in this area, and I had Andrew Perriman's book on the subject back in the day, and it helped me for a time to grapple with the obvious sense of the biblical text. The only other time I felt like this regarding this subject was reading Tom Stark's chapter on the issue in The Human Faces of God, and I'd recommend him to be on the show for this and many other subjects. He too went from futurism to preterism in the wake of N.T. Wright, and then finally moved to the failed apocalyptic prophet solution in the same way as Matthew has, but as it turns out, remains a liberal Christian even within that concept. Anyway, thank you very much, Andrew, for your feedback. I'm glad you were able to connect with his story on many levels. This is from Gabriel, who says, I'm a long-time listener of the show, incredibly grateful for the ministry. You're doing a great job of getting different views across, while seemingly unbiased most of the time, smiley face. I've never written in before, but this latest episode hit so close to home. To cut my own story short, I now see myself as leaning heavily towards partial preterism. Now, just for those who are not familiar with this preterism term that's already been mentioned by Andrew in the previous email, this is the view that some of those things that Jesus speaks of in passages like Matthew 24 were in fact fulfilled, despite their apocalyptic language, by the destruction of Jerusalem and the ransacking of the temple and so on in, I think it was AD 60. But anyway, obviously you say, leaning heavily towards partial preterism as opposed to the futurist environment I once grew up in. I really struggled with these aspects of the faith being a futurist. Preterism, on the other hand, has done more to strengthen and stimulate my faith, and I can only say I wish I'd discovered it sooner. I think both Matthew Hartke and Andrew Perriman seemed thoughtful, had a great dialogue. Here are some of the things I reacted to. I get the impression from Matthew that he feels like recorded history hasn't been cataclysmic enough to fit the prophecies of Jesus. However, the coming on the clouds idiom is used elsewhere in the Bible in terms of judgment, where a physical coming of the Lord was not apparent, but rather a coming in judgment. You recommend a breakdown of this passage in a video Gary DeMar has made in response to a similar objection from William Lane Craig. And Matthew seems to be expecting some cataclysmic transition between the Old and New Covenant, like the end of pagan oppression or the end of Rome itself. I agree, there is a great feeling of expectation and imminence throughout the New Testament, as well as these big words being used by Jesus in the Olivet Discourse. But Jesus also said in Luke 17:20-21, the coming of the kingdom of God is not something that can be observed, nor will people say, here it is or there it is, because the kingdom of God is in your midst. And Revelation 20 states that when the devil is bound, it is explicitly to prevent him from deceiving the nations. Well, if that happened at the dawn of the new covenant age, wouldn't the cataclysmic event look something like what history has since shown, namely the establishment and growth of the church over the last 2,000 years, now consisting of both Jew and Gentile, as opposed to only the Jews? Thank you very much. There was more here in your email. I'm afraid no time to read it all out, but I will forward it on to Matthew. So thank you, Gabriel, for getting in touch. Tim in Japan says, as I listened to Matthew make his case for why he thinks Jesus was a failed apocalyptic prophet, I couldn't help but think he's literally thrown the baby out with the bathwater, a phrase particularly appropriate during this Christmas season. I think, however, that this podcast was dealing with the wrong question, something Matthew himself hinted at when he mentioned that he rejected the resurrection for similar reasons. Perhaps you should have him back to dialogue with someone like Habermas about that question, as everything else really depends on how one answers that question. I've forgotten who said this, but I think it's true. If Jesus Christ was truly raised from the dead, there isn't anything more important. And if he was not raised from the dead, there's likewise nothing that is more important. If Jesus really was who he claimed to be, as verified through his conquering of death itself, then whatever one makes of the enigmatic wording of Matthew 24, it won't be that Jesus was a failed apocalyptic prophet who believed that the end of the world would come within the lifetime of the people he was talking to. If, however, Jesus is still in the grave, then he's not only a failed apocalyptic prophet, but no saviour at all. John says, really enjoyed the show. Matthew is representative to me of just how accessible these important discussions are to everyone, and that with the right motivation and self-discipline, we can indeed all weigh in sensitively, knowledgeably, and with awareness of the impact of our own life story has had on us. That said, he certainly raised the bar pretty high for lay researchers like me. My only comment beyond this appreciation was an underdeveloped understanding of how Matthew functions and functioned for the early church. The way that the episode was structured meant that less informed listeners might feel they were getting the earliest Christian theology first, with with Matthew and then it widening out with Paul. Well, that's certainly not the case, given the scholarly consensus of the literary dependence of Matthew on Mark, plus a hypothetical Q source, and his high level of theological structuring, making his gospel the most useful for liturgy and discipleship. The statement about the remaining towns in Judea and fulfilled prophecy need to be taken in light of a whole host of already transpiring events. Most, if not all, of the immediate ministry of Paul, a John/Jesus baptism, meaning clear up, and the multiple documented accounts the Matthean author has literally in front of him. Matthew is late, you say. So on the not tasting death prophecies, I guess I myself no longer find too much embarrassment there. I think it was Crossan who so well describes the role of the apocalyptic preacher. It has to be imminent. Who wants to listen to a preacher foretelling what will happen 1,000 years from now? Jonathan Pennington's recent book on the Sermon on the Mount was also useful to me. It provides extra interesting backdrop on the gospel as wisdom literature affected by Second Temple eschatological expectations. Whew. Thank you very much. Jeff in Canada says, was listening to your programme, Was Jesus a Failed Apocalyptic Prophet? Always sad when a person's faith is challenged due to apparent contradictions in scripture. I completely sympathise with those individuals, but believe one's desire to know the truth should go beyond our preconceptions to fully understanding scripture. Regarding the discrepancy highlighted around the Olivet Discourse, from my current studies, there seems to be a difference in the accounts recorded in Matthew versus Luke that points to different incidents. Matthew seems to be addressing things after the signs, or non-signs, since the end is not yet, while Luke speaks of things before the signs. Briefly, it seems to suggest that Luke was referring to things that occurred within 38 years of the resurrection, the destruction of the temple, surrounding Roman armies against Jerusalem, etc., that Luke 21:32 states some present would be alive to see, while not mentioning the abomination of desolation Matthew references that deals with things after the signs. Historical records by Josephus and the early fathers support the accounts that Jesus predicts. As we depend on the Holy Spirit in our study of God's word, he will reveal his truth, although there may be apparent contradictions. I've heard a saying that resonates with me. The only barrier to truth is the presumption we already have it. I'm continually encouraged by your program. God bless. Thank you, Jeff. And maybe we'll leave the last one to Chris Goswami, who says, I take the view that God created everything, not just the material substance we see, but everything, including the natural laws of the universe, even time itself. I think there are biblical pointers to this idea, e.g. from 1,000 years as a day in 2 Peter, right back to Genesis 1, where the very idea of a day first occurs in creation. There are other references too. Time has been created to enable us to have a framework for making sense of our existence, but time doesn't limit God. A discussion where we try to pin God down using words like when, or in the future, or going to happen, or sequential, or indeed any dated events, as discussed on the show, doesn't therefore work. God's reality is outside all such phrases. He created time itself. He isn't bound inside it. So if we go back to the questions on the show, when will all these things happen, like the last trumpet or the dead being raised or the second coming? Well, these things have already happened for all who have passed from this world, and they will happen for you and I at the instant we pass from this world, since at that point we cease to exist in a world limited by time and we enter God's eternal reality. A bit like waking up, not realizing you've even been asleep. I guess I need to find a theologian who agrees with me, but that's what makes sense to me. Maybe I'll write a blog about it. Thank you, Chris. It's an interesting way of looking at it. I'm always interested to hear your feedback to these interesting theological conundrums. And if you are not sure what we're talking about, go back to the show of 2 weeks ago on the Unbelievable podcast archive and you'll find it. Matthew Hartke and Andrew Perryman debating whether Jesus was a failed apocalyptic prophet. For the moment, thank you for being with me on today's show. It was fun, wasn't it? Our Christmas edition of the programme. Hope you can come back as well for next week, so we'll be just ahead of New Year by then. And I've got an interesting discussion on apologetics.
You're unbelievable.
Myron B. Penner, author of The End of Apologetics, has been very critical of the whole endeavour of supporting faith through evidence and reason and rationalistic kind of ways of proving God and that sort of thing. He'll be in discussion with Sean McDowell to talk about that. Hope you can come back again at the same time. For now, have a very happy Christmas. You've been listening to the Unbelievable podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Podbean, or any other podcasting software, and find out more about our other Premier podcasts at premier.org.uk/podcasts.